Welcome to the Two Daft Yanks Podcast, the show that brings you tidbits from all aspects of the soccer world. Sometimes serious, sometimes zany, always opinionated. Now, here are your hosts, Chad Smith and Corey Chatelain.
This is the Two Daft Yanks Podcast. Greetings to you, wherever you may be. Chad Smith here, ready for another exciting edition of the podcast. And let me bring in my co-host, Mr. Corey Chatelain.
Yeah. I don't know how daft I'm going to be this week. I'm flying beerless.
Beerless, you say?
Yeah, because of the Stoke hangover. I was hungover from Stoke enough. I didn't need any beer today.
Okay. Isn't that a crime in Alaska not to have blood in your alcohol stream?
Pretty much. yeah, but I mean, I'm going to get some later, but yeah. Right now, I'm still hungover from the damn Stoke match.
Okay, well, you're off the hook. We are not going to talk about that today, but let me tell the folks what is in store for today's edition of the Two Daft Yanks podcast. We will be talking about the League Cup to lead off the show. Then we're going to get into a little daftness with Sandro, Pardew, and the Italian club Parma. Next, we will update the folks on some financial fair play news, and then we will wrap up the show with talk of Jurgen Klinsmann and the mostly European-based roster he has picked for the friendly this week against Ukraine. And note, I did not say the Ukraine like everybody does. It's just Ukraine. Okay. So, sir.
So it's like MLS, not the MLS.
That is true, too. Yes, that's another thing that people always like to put the in front of the MLS, which is weird. Do we do that with the NFL? Do we say the NFL? No, it's just NFL.
Ah, screw it. I'm one of those who do it, so
okay.
Y'all can bite me.
Well, that's fine. So, with that grammar lesson in the books, are you ready to rock and roll today, sir?
Yes, I am.
All right. Now, first, actually,
I
lied.
Ready for the rock and roll.
Yes, I lied here. Actually, we have some site news to get to first, boys and girls. As you know, we talk about and we thank you every week because the numbers to 2daftyanks.com keep climbing and climbing. And I'm proud to say that we, in January, broke the traffic record, but we also did it in February.
Yeah!
And you know why February is impressive?
It's shorter.
That's right. So we beat the record in less days. And that is all because of our loyal blog readers and podcast listeners. So we thank you.
Yeah, because my second guess was going to be February is impressive because that's the month that contained both of our birthdays, too.
I don't see the correlation there. Where are you going with this?
It's impressive. We're impressive. Okay, moving on.
Okay, so, and another thing, you know, we have the gremlins and the code. The feeds were down a couple weeks ago. Now, all last night, I burnt the midnight oil on the lamp, per se, and I got the download button working again on the site. So, 2daftyanks really is your one-stop source. You can listen to the pod on the website now, and now the download button is back. On most of the podcasts, of all the recent ones, I need to go back through and fix the first ones. But you can now click the download button and download the podcast to your computer or the device of your choice.
Yeah, so all you people with itchy trigger fingers, get clicking.
Yes, and they have, so, and we thank you. So, all right, now let's get into the talk. Today, of course, in the English league season, I don't know if that's the right wording or not, was our first major trophy, because I don't count the Community Shield. Sorry, Manchester United. Did they win that? They beat Wigan. Yeah.
I don't know.
So that's the only trophy they're going to see for a while.
I watch less of the Community Shield than I do of the League Cup.
Okay. So Manchester City defeated Sunderland 3-1 in the League Cup. And, you know, the match, for the most part, was a lot more entertaining than I thought it would be. because, you know, on the surface, Manchester City is a title contender, and Sunderland is trying to avoid relegation. So it really was a mismatch, but Sunderland did a good job of hanging in there for the most part, scoring the early goal 10 minutes in the game by Fabio Borini to take the 1-0 lead.
Yeah, and I actually got up at 4:30 to watch this match, because as much as I make fun of the League Cup, and if anybody follows me on Twitter, I usually mock it by, you know, it's funny that people care about the League Cup now, because when I first started watching in the 90s, it was definitely a competition where pretty much nobody cared about it unless you got to the semis or the finals, you know, because obviously everybody gets excited for a trip to Wembley. But yeah, I was, like you said, I was actually sort of impressed, and at least, you know, it was worth getting up that early for me, that, you know, that the game was actually pretty entertaining. And granted, that was definitely helped by Sunderland getting that early goal.
No, that definitely was the case, and they had a chance to go up 2-0, but there was an outstanding tackle by Vincent Kompany to where, either way, if he gets that wrong, either Borini scores a second goal and they go 2-0, or he commits a penalty and perhaps a red card, too.
Yeah, because what was interesting about that was that how he obviously made up for basically his error on the first goal, which it wasn't exactly an actual error, but I was surprised how easily Borini kind of pushed him off the ball or muscled him off the ball, you know, running for that long ball on the first goal, because, you know, it's not like Borini's big or anything, but yeah, Kompany got basically muscled off the ball, which I was surprised at. So yeah, so like I said, basically being at fault for the first goal, he did a good job for making amends for that when he easily could have, you know, completely had a nightmare of a game by, like you said, you know, getting that tackle wrong, getting sent off, and then basically being at fault for the, you know, for both the goals, or what would have been two goals.
Mm-hmm, but that would have been an alternate universe, and in this universe he made the tackle, and in the second half, Manchester City took control of the game with two goals in 2 minutes, basically. And I know this term gets thrown out there quite a bit, world class, but they really were two world class goals.
Yeah, especially on Nasri's goal, because I actually missed the first goal because I was in the bathroom, and of course when I heard the hooping and the holler and I had to rush out, so I actually caught I happened to catch Nasri's goal. But yeah, Nasri's goal, you know, a goal is struck well and, like you said, is basically world class when the keeper doesn't even move. And like I said, the keeper was basically frozen on Nasri's hit.
As he was with Torre's, because he was completely blinded. He was screened, and Torre looped it into the upper corner. So you still haven't seen Torre's goal, is what you're telling me.
No, I saw it, but just meaning I didn't see it.
You didn't see it live?
Yeah, I didn't see it real time.
Okay.
Yeah, because actually Torre's goal kind of reminded me of there's an iconic goal that Patrick Vieira scored against Manchester United, I think in 2002, where he basically just ran up corner of the box and looped it over Schmeichel's head. And like Manone, Schmeichel basically couldn't do anything to do it. Now, granted, Schmeichel gave a little half-hearted jump, but yeah, point being is that, yeah, Torre's goal kind of reminded me of Vieira's goal. Now, granted, this was in a cup final, so, you know, it obviously helped this club to win a trophy. But, yeah, so anyway, both goals were pretty sweet, as you said.
Mm-hmm. So we'll have to see what happens here now. In the past couple of years, we know the clubs who have won the League Cup the past few years have kind of took a dramatic downturn after winning said cup. But obviously Manchester City has other goals in store for them. And so I don't think you're going to see a League Cup swoon like you would with a smaller club.
Yeah, and that's what I was just about to say. Is like I think in the other cases where the two clubs that won the cup that ended up tanking afterwards, where they basically, you know, were mentally on the beach already. Like you said, I think it had to do that they were what would be considered smaller clubs, and that, you know, they kind of figured, okay, we won a trophy, our work's done for the year. Where, you know, obviously City circumstances are far different, where, you know, they're still technically fighting on four fronts, even though I don't think they're going to be able to overturn that deficit against Barcelona. But obviously they have a chance to do that. But obviously, you know, they have really good chances to still win the league title and then the FA Cup as well. So yeah, their circumstances are a lot different than the previous two cup winners that basically went into a nosedive after they won it.
Mm-hmm. And so it could be a blessing in disguise for Sunderland not to win this match if they do in fact stay up, which is a big if at this point in time.
Yeah, it definitely depends, because, I mean, obviously, Poyet made a bunch of changes from the side that got basically took the day off against us, you know, the prior weekend, us being Arsenal. So, I mean, obviously, that's going to be his job now, is that the player's going to mail it in even further now, not that they mailed it in today, but just meaning that since they didn't want to, you know, win their trophy, are they basically gonna give up on the season, or like you said, like you were just alluding to, you know, is it gonna spur them on to fight even harder to avoid relegation?
And we'll see. And so both with Sunderland and Manchester City, we have an interesting situation to where, because of their involvement in the League Cup, Sunderland actually have two games in hand on pretty much everyone around them except for Crystal Palace and West Brom. So those later games coming in the season could be huge, and I know one of them is against West Brom that will be rescheduled at some point here. And Manchester City has the same thing. They have two games in hand on the top three of Chelsea, Liverpool, and Arsenal, with Chelsea at 63 points. Liverpool's now in second on goal difference with 59 points, and Arsenal's in third with 59 also. But City's got two games in hand, and plus...
And they got that ridiculous goal difference.
Uh-huh, and... they're going to get another game in hand this weekend because they're still in the FA Cup, so that match has been canceled. So they're going to have three games in hand on some teams here before too long.
Yeah, which the game in hand is sometimes it's a good, you know, having games in hand sometimes is looked at as being a good thing, although, you know, when you have to win those matches, sometimes it can actually be, in my opinion, it's actually worse to not have played that game. You know, obviously with a club like City and the quality of players they have, you know, at their disposal, that's a lot different than, you know, having games in hand and being in another club chasing other clubs. But yeah, with their goal difference, you know, they obviously... I see a lot of pundits recently, they've started this thing where the goal difference is basically like having another point, which, you know, technically it is. So yeah, City's goal scoring exploits and having that ridiculous goal difference plus the two games in hand, I definitely think that, you know, that's definitely working in their favor despite Chelsea, you know, doing the Mourinho thing where they're grinding out results.
That's true, and that's what they were kind of doing under their former manager, Mancini, and they've opted for, what do you call him, Manuel Pellegrini in your last blog, which actually I had someone comment to me, and I'm going to ask you now here, live on the podcast. And since it's kind of a joke blog when you do the Nuggets, you did call Pellegrini Spanish when he is in fact Chilean.
Yes.
Did you do that on purpose?
No, that one I got wrong.
Okay, there we go. That's terrible.
But hey, it'll work.
That's terrible. You don't get paid your zero salary to make mistakes like that.
Well, there you go. I mean, I got it wrong because, you know, I'm not from Mexico. So I don't hang around Spanish people from Mexico all the time, so.
Okay. All right. Now, we have praised Manchester City, but I just want to get into some numbers here and to run a joke that I can't believe I haven't used yet. You know, for the longest time, the Capital One Cup is now sponsored by I just said it backwards. The League Cup is now sponsored by Capital One, I meant to say there. And so you can now ask the question with Manchester City, what's in your trophy cabinet?
Waka waka.
That is the Capital One Cup.
Yes.
So, now, since the new, in quote, ownership of Manchester City, with their UAE ownership taking over in 2008, they have now won the league, the FA Cup, and the League Cup in their transition period there. And I went through all their transfer numbers since then, and it only cost them 576 million euros to win those three trophies.
Oh, yeah.
That's a pretty good deal.
Yeah, you want that in traveler's checks? Or?
Yeah, that breaks down to, it only cost Manchester City 192 million per trophy. That's a pretty good investment, would you say?
Yeah, it's spend some fucking money.
So there you go. So congrats, Manchester City. You spent 576 million to get your English football trophy trifecta.
Yes, considering that's more than the value of a lot of clubs, it's it is what it is. I mean, obviously, it's going to continue the transfer fee arm race that Abramovich and company started at Chelsea. And, you know, to a lesser extent, Arsenal, Manchester United, and Barcelona, Real, etc. But, yeah, I mean, obviously the City fans aren't going to care, but, you know, when and if this financial fair play stuff ever comes down the pipe as it's being touted, you know, maybe it will matter eventually. Who knows?
Mm-hmm. And we will switch order here of our topics, and I should have known I was going to segue into this that way. But yes, we do have breaking news from this week on financial fair play. UEFA has announced that sometime in April, and I can't find the date. I thought I've seen April 5th as a date you should circle on your calendars as being the day UEFA will announce the sanctions against the clubs who have been deemed to break the financial fair play rules. And the reports are that 73 or 76 clubs are having their financial fair play regulations looked at. And now remember this. This comes from our friend Ed Thompson, who runs the financialfairplay.co.uk website, which I had a conversation with, which you can still see on 2dafganks.com. But he says that don't read too much into that, because the financial fair play rules are more than just money rules. The clubs have agreed to do things, you know, like establish three levels of youth club set up to, you know, go to referee training every summer, to send a representative to your club to sensitivity training every year. So there's just little things like that that clubs have violated, which is technically a violation of financial fair play, but it may not have anything to do with the financial fair play break-even requirement. But everybody who follows this stuff says that Manchester City, Chelsea, and PSG are in a lot of trouble, it looks like. So we'll see if UEFA has the balls to do something. But as we talked about either last week or the podcast before, Corey, it looks like bans from competition aren't going to happen. But any amount of money you spend over that threshold, you won't be able to register those players for the Champions League. That's going to be the punishment, it looks like. So that all that information will come out in April.
Yeah, which, like I said, I'm interested to see how this is all going to play out because, I mean, a club like Chelsea technically, obviously we're going to have to do some more research on this because, like I said, I'm curious to see what's going to happen because, like I said, a club like Chelsea, all they have to do is just recall the 20 players they have on loan, and now they got, you know, a whole, you know, like a squad of 50 players to choose from to be able to, you know, kind of like what gets mocked on the Ars blog comment threads about it's like a new signing when a player returns from a long injury or from, you know, like a loan spell. But like I said, in Chelsea's case, you know, they've had like three or four of their players have been on loan to different clubs like 3-4 years at a time. So like I said, they can recall some of these guys and, you know, it's almost like a transfer, you know, or almost like a new signing when it's not really a, you know, a new signing. So I don't know. I'm always interested to see this kind of stuff because some of these financial or when you hit clubs or owners or, you know, people with financial sort of regulations that have the money to basically overpay to begin with, like I said, a lot of times these things don't really end up being penalties per se. They end up being more like a luxury tax kind of thing where, you know, I mean, somebody like Abramovich or the UAE owning or the ruling family that owns City, you know, all they're going to do, or, you know, my cynical nature says all they're going to do is like, okay, well, that's the thing. Well, here's like 100 extra thousand, you know, we'll just pay the penalty. So I don't know. I guess what I'm getting at is, in my opinion, there needs to be more competitive type, you know, more on-field or more competition-related competitive bans rather than, you know, the financial or the salary cap type of stuff. Because, like I said, that still leaves it open to, like, you know, finding these little loopholes to work players in or something.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. Your point that Chelsea, with their large roster, and they're like, what, they have like in the upper 20s? That number of players is currently out on loan right now?
Yeah, it's at least 22, 23 players last time I saw.
Mm-hmm. And so if they have to cut players back, well, fine. They'll just exclude a couple of their big-name guys if they have to, but they have plenty of quality to bring back in these younger players who may be making less but are still very good but just can't crack into the rotation at Chelsea for obvious reasons.
Or like Romelu Lukaku. I mean, does Romelu Lukaku count against that if he comes back? Because, like I said, he's technically a Chelsea player, and as good as he's doing at Everton, you know, personally, I think Mourinho is going to replace Lukaku or replace Torres with Lukaku next year, or, you know, at least integrate him into the side more. So does somebody like Lukaku count against the you know, the financial fair play stuff, or is
he
one of those?
His wages do. If they're paying now, Everton may be paying all his wages. I have no idea what Lukaku's contract situation is like.
Right, but what I'm saying is when Chelsea recalls him on loan, if they're already paying his wages while he's on loan, you know, that's what I was saying earlier. That's almost like getting a transfer without actually transferring a new player. You know what I mean?
No, exactly. No, it would be that case if they're not. If they're paying most of his salary anyway, once he comes back, it's not going to be that big of a hurt to them. Exactly.
Yes, I don't know. It just seems like the loans, I guess what I'm roundabout way of kind of stumbling into, I guess the point is that it seems like maybe loans might be a way to abuse or, you know, to work around, you know, the regulations that UEFA is going to enforce or maybe not, you know, like I said, I mean, obviously we'll have to see how some of this stuff plays out. But like I said, I'm of the opinion, unless you actually hit clubs where it's going to hurt them most, you know, actually on the field or actually in competitions, I just see this, you know, becoming a situation where clubs are just going to find ways around it. Kind of like what Man U did, originally with the, when everybody thought the financial fair play stuff was going to be tied to match day revenue, they were like, okay, well, we'll start sponsoring or we'll just start getting sponsors for our practice stadium and our practice uniforms. So like I said, it just whenever it comes to the stuff with the financial stuff, you know, the rules are only as good as the accountants. And like I said, the accountants and engineers and et cetera, all those people are good at finding, you know, loopholes in all these regulations. So like I said, I'm of the opinion if you don't put sort of competitive regulations on these clubs, they're just going to find ways around these things.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. We're years away from having something that is foolproof. So we'll have to see what happens. So mark your calendars for April, and trust me, we will cover this more than any other podcast out there because we understand it may not be fun to talk about. Your average fan may not care about financial fair play, but you should, because if it's enforced or if it's not enforced, it's going to have a huge impact on the field results for the years to come.
Well, yeah, because this is it's kind of like when taxes change, you know, the first few years or the first, you know, the first year or two when you have new taxes, businesses sometimes they don't invest or they don't want to hire because they don't know how the taxes are going to affect their, you know, their bottom line. So like I said, regardless of what happens, I think this is going to heavily affect how transfers are done in the next 2 or 3 years, because some clubs aren't going to know how to basically, you know, track or not monitor, but, you know, they're not going to know how to implement, new signings or a certain level of signing, because, like I said, they're not going to be sure how this is going to affect their bottom line because of the financial fair play stuff. So, like I said, just the simple fact that it's going to dictate certain clubs' transfer policies in the coming years, it's important.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's move on. We're not going to segue into anything because this is a clean drop of the topic. Let's get into some daft things. We, the two daft gangsters, are going to try to each week find a few things that we consider are daft and bring them to you in this quick hitting segment. So I'm going to bring up three little quick things here, Corey, and I want your quick reaction. Now on Thursday, one Sandro, the intimidating defensive midfielder of Tottenham Hotspur, made his return from a long injury layoff in the Europa League versus Dnipro, and he was sporting a new look that made a lot of people compare him to Call, one of the characters in the Game of Thrones. So if you go to 2daftinks.com, go to the blog post for this and click on where we mentioned Sandro, and you'll get to see the picture, the side-by-side.
Okay, and just for the audience, Game of Thrones nerd Claxon, Call is not the name, it's his title.
Oh, true, yes.
Yes, the character's name is actually Drogo. So for any game, you know, just saying, for any Game of Thrones nerds out there like myself, don't send us angry emails saying Call's not his name.
Sorry, and I should know that, but you're more on this to me because you've read the books.
Yes, and I'm definitely a Game of Thrones, A Song of Ice and Fire, which is the actual series name, complete nerd for that. So,
But he had what was reminiscent of the look was the ponytail beard look.
Yes, the rubber band ponytailed beard. Yes. All he was missing was the darkened eyeliner to make him look even more menacing.
Dude, that'd be awesome if you wore eyeliner.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Wow. I hope he does that. I hope someone tells him. And I hope he grows a ponytail, too.
Well, yeah, because think when if he scores and he rips his shirt off, he definitely should do some Khal Drogo action.
Yeah.
So Khal, Cal, whatever.
Yeah, so there's Sandro. He is he's coming to mount your stallions, as you said.
The stallion who mounts the midfield, as somebody said on Twitter. I thought that was pretty funny.
Yes.
It's like, yeah, damn it, even for a Spurs guy, it's like, oh, damn it, that's pretty clever. I got to give it to him.
All right. Next up, kind of in this violent tough guy mode, there's a new tough guy who plays for Newcastle, or associated with Newcastle.
Wait. Let's flip again. Let's do the Parma thing first, because I'm probably going to talk a few minutes on Pardew.
Okay. We'll skip him. Okay, Parma. This is an interesting thing. Now, I saw this. I heard this on TalkSport, and I was able to dig around, and I think I found this reference via the Dirty Tackle blog, and then Who Ate All the Pies had it too. But if you go to 2daftinks.com and you click on the Parma link that we have in this podcast post, you'll get to see, I guess it's like Parma's 100th year anniversary as a club. And it's customary for when these clubs reach these milestones to give the clubs that come bring them gifts. And one of the sponsors for Parma this year is, I don't know if they're an Italian or a European company, but it is a company called Vorwerk, I don't know how you pronounce it, V-O-R-W-E-R-K. And so if you go there, you'll see pictures of Parma handing out vacuums to the Fiorentina squad, and they're like these, to get an American comparison, they're like these Roomba, robot vacuums that you just set out, and they have the little lasers, and they know where to go. They run on their own. So you see all these awkward pictures of the two teams going through their handshakes, and Parma's handing out vacuums.
Yeah, which the picture with, like I said, the picture that I like the most has the caption, you know, the guy's walking off, and like you said, he's kind of looking at it like, you know, what the hell is this? And the caption's going, or the caption says, going straight on eBay.
So there you go. So your Parma sponsors are trying to get their name out there.
Yeah, which I guess, when you're handed a vacuum cleaner, I guess even if you were to like your gift, even if you like your gift as a vacuum cleaner, you can still say, this gift sucks.
Yes, that is right.
Because
it does.
Hey, yo.
Hold on. There you go. Kind of.
Yeah.
Oh, actually, I hit the wrong one. Here's
yeah,
the
needs, yeah, needs, there you go. Yeah. Hey, yo.
Oh, man. I got my drums confused there.
Hey, it was Pellegrini Spanish. What do I know?
So. There we go. So, Parma. Good on you, Parma, handing out vacuums. I guess Fiorentina, they think they're dirty. They're a dirty team.
Yeah, clean up your act.
I'm surprised we didn't see that, like some maybe in some of the Italian tabloids. Yeah. Parma accuses Fiorentina of being dirty by handing them vacuums.
Well, again, maybe that's the subtle message. They're trying to, you know, clean up your play. Here's a vacuum. Quit playing dirty.
All right, now can I get into this Pardew stuff now?
Yes.
Okay, and remember, this is just your quick hitter. We got to end this segment so we can talk about the U.S. men's national team. But Pardew, so Newcastle has a new tough guy. Joey Barton is long gone, but it seems Pardew has stepped right in. And this outrageous incident where Pardew headbutted a whole city Tiger player. We're going to call him the... Okay, yes, that is his name. And he received a red card. He's been sent off. And the news is today that Newcastle has fined him £100,000, which is $168,000 American dollars. And he's facing a touchline ban not only from the club, but from the FA as well. So what is your quick initial reaction and opinion on the actions of one Alan Pardew, who I like to call, and this is a very, well, it's not an R name, but it's a PG-13 name. I like to call him Alan Pardouche, because he's a douchebag.
Yeah, that's, I mean, I haven't liked Pardew ever since he basically had the tete-a-tete with Wenger several years ago, where when he was managing West Ham, and West Ham scored a late equalizer to snatch a point, and he basically was taunting Wenger in his face, and Wenger just kind of pushed him away, you know, kind of like you know, get away, just get away. It wasn't like it was an aggressive push. And then he got all hopping mad, of course, and got back in his face. But he's had several touchline incidents where the guy clearly has problems controlling his emotions, which is very unusual for an English manager. And I don't know if you watched Match of the Day, but for once I shockingly agreed with Robbie. Damn. But Robbie for once Ballard? I shocked. No, Savage.
Yes.
Sorry. I shockingly agreed with Robbie Savage that I don't think a fine was enough. I mean, it was actually a dismissible offense, and that kind of like somebody on Twitter posted too, that Newcastle dropped the ball, that you know, they blew their chance of getting out of that 8-year contract of Pardew by not forcing him to resign because of this incident. Because yeah, it's, I mean, obviously there was no like real violence, but for a manager to do this, this is the type of incident where he should be facing at least a 10-match ban, which, you know, obviously would end, you know, which would be the end of the season. But, you know, when you're in a position of influence and power and, at a club like that, that these are just incidents that you just simply can't do. Because again, both Savage and Alan Hansen made the good point on Match of the Day that it's like, if your manager can't control himself, how are players supposed to listen to him when he tries to discipline them? So, like I said, I agreed with the opinion that, you know, he probably should have been dismissed from the club.
Well, you know, the English law is quite different than ours, and I'm just going to say, on the surface, it sounds like to me that perhaps they would have a more difficult time than they would here on firing him for cause based on this incident. And so that's why they haven't done it. Now, it still could happen tomorrow or even today. It's late now. I probably wouldn't hear, but maybe tomorrow. So it still could be in the cards, but perhaps because of the difference in English law, perhaps it's not really a sackable offense, and they would have to eat that contract, and they simply can't afford to. Just throwing an idea out there.
You know, that's true too, but yeah, I don't know. It definitely seems like it's the kind of incident that, I don't know. See, I think it's the kind of incident where they would be able to easily fire him. But yeah, it definitely sounded, when they released a statement yesterday evening that Pardew had they had accepted his apology, and you know they had levied the £100,000 fine. It kind of sounded like he was going to keep his job, but obviously, like you said, that things can still happen, because yeah, it's like I said, it's the kind of incident where the FA is probably going to come down pretty heavily, and I wouldn't be surprised at all that, like I said, if he's basically going to be banned from the touchline for the rest of the season, because I'm definitely of the opinion it should be at least a 10-match ban.
Yeah, so we'll see. The FA is not known for making decisions in a hasty manner. And they're not always making the right decisions, it seems, a lot of the time. I mean, it took them, what, months? I mean, the Anelka decision just came down last week.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that could be a whole nother show in and of itself. But, yeah, usually these kind of incidents that involves managers, they're a little more swift to act. The stuff that involves racism or possible or alleged racism, like the Anelka Canell incident, you know, some people accuse the FA of not caring about racist incidents. A lot of times I think it they take their time with it simply because a lot of that stuff is kind of hard to prove, because you're at that point you're trying to get into somebody's head. So I just think a lot of times with that kind of stuff, the FA just doesn't know what to do, so they kind of take their time. Where these kind of things, it's pretty cut and dry. you raise your hand to somebody, you have any sort of contact on a player, that's a no-no. As a manager, it's even more of a no-no because, I mean, obviously they're all adults, but, for all intents and purposes in practice, it's kind of like an adult attacking a child at this point. So, like I said, it definitely deserves a really long ban.
Okay, and I'm gonna have to cut you off there so we can stay on
Yeah,
track.
that's fine because I'm done.
Okay, and I am going to urge you, whatever news breaks on this in the next few days, blog. Will you commit to it now to blog about this incident and your thoughts?
Yes, I will
Okay,
because
there we go.
it'll be an excuse to bash on Pardue, who I
There we
don't
go.
like.
All right, so look for sometime in the midweek here after Monday when maybe we get the situation is a little clearer. Corey will blog on 2DaftKings.com about this Pardew situation. But now, I wanted this to be the bulk of the show, but we're going to have to sneak it in, and that's fine. And maybe I'll blog about this after, and I know I will. The U.S. men's national team takes on Ukraine. Not the Ukraine, as we mentioned earlier, but we're taking on Ukraine and Cyprus. And the match had to be moved because of the civil unrest, in quotes, in Ukraine. And I could tell you that Klinsmann has already cut from his original roster, and this kind of makes me mad. And this has just come out today, so this may be news to all of you. He originally called in 24 players on the camp, where they're in Germany. They reported today to train, and that has been cut to 21. I'll tell you the three players who have backed out, and then we'll run through the roster really quick, Corey. Michael Bradley, with an injury in quotes, has backed out so he can focus on the start of the MLS season. Now that's a bunch of garbage as far as I'm concerned. Mixed Diskerud is not fit, and Tim Ream has backed out because of personal reasons. But the fact that Bradley has stayed behind for a minor issue in quotes to prepare for the start of the MLS season is absolutely ridiculous. And I'm sure Klinsmann, I don't know, I don't think he'd be in favor of this. It'll be interesting to see if he talks about the situation. But Michael Bradley moving to the MLS has already had a negative impact, and the season hasn't even started, to where the only friendly he'll be available for before World Cup time gets going here, he backs out because and they even mention the start of the MLS season is the reason why.
Yeah, which I mean he had been with Roma for a while, so I would doubt he would need the to build up preseason train or fitness for to be match fit. So yeah, it's a curious situation because do we know if was it Bradley who backed out or was it Klinsmann who sent him home?
It does not say. It sounds like the way they're wording it, it sounds like the MLS club probably was complaining. And you see this a lot in Europe too. Basically, it's probably a fake injury. Because Toronto has a nationally televised game on Saturday, the first of the MLS season, which opens up. And of course, they're going to want him to play in that first game. So I guarantee you he plays in that game, even though he's hurt, in quotes.
Okay, and I was just asking because I was wondering how much it might have been, maybe Klinsmann sending a message of, I'm going to send you home. You only have one friendly. You better play well, or your spots, not spot on the team, but maybe your starting spot might be on the line, kind of thing. So, like I said, I was just curious, where the. On which side it actually, made the move to stay, I guess.
Okay, and I don't know that right now. So it's interesting.
But I
And
agree with you. He's going to play on Saturday.
oh, this slam dunk he's going to play. It's the first game on national TV he's going to be playing when he should be playing for his national team. So whatever. Our thoughts on this situation have been very clear. So let me actually run through the people who actually care enough to show up. and sorry, this sounds like I'm harsh. I'm mad right now. I'm raging against Michael Bradley. The goalkeepers called in the camp are Cody Cropper of Southampton, Brad Guzan of Aston Villa, and Tim Howard of Everton. No surprise there.
Well, Cody Cropper is.
The number one and the number two, and Cropper's been called up before for the European games. So he's a young keeper who Southampton has had in their system for a little bit. So that's good news to see him back in camp. And he probably is one of the future top keepers for the U.S. after Howard and Guzan have their time here. All right, defense-wise, John Brooks from Hertha Berlin has been called in. Jeff Cameron, Stoke City. Edgar Castillo, one of the few North American-based players from Club Tijuana, has been called up. Alfredo Morales from Ingolstadt is in camp. Gooch, who's plying his trade at Sheffield Wednesday, is in camp. As is Will Packwood from Birmingham City. In the midfield, Alejandro Bedoya from Nantes. Fabian Johnson, Hoffenheim, who has announced his move that he will be making for next season to Mönchengladbach. That has been made official. Jermaine Jones, who just made his debut in Turkey. Sasha Kleistin, Anderlecht, Breck Shea, who is on loan from Stoke at Barnsley. And Danny Williams, who is at Reading. The forwards, Juan Agudelo, playing in the Dutch league at Utrecht. Josie Altidore of Sunderland, who was dropped today, as we mentioned. Terrence Boyd, Rapid Vienna. Clint Dempsey, Seattle Sounders, who is still in Europe, by the way, folks. With Fulham, because he just played there. So I know a lot of people are, oh, why are they calling up Clint? He's going to miss the start of the MLS season. Well, he's already in Europe.
Well, yeah.
And he's the captain of the dang team, so he's got to be there.
Well, yeah, I thought that was funny that you were telling me that the MLS bots were complaining, why isn't Dempsey coming home and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, well, first of all, he said like a week ago he was going to stay in Europe until the friendly, and then I saw he played and started for Fulham yesterday. So it's like, well, there you go. How's he gonna play? How's he gonna go to the Sounders pre-camp when he's starting for Fulham?
Yeah, pretty difficult. Okay, then we had Julian Green, who is on there like on a trial, I guess is the best way to say it. He's there unofficially from Bayern Munich, and then Aaron Johansson from Alkmaar. So there's your roster who will face Ukraine and Cyprus, and looking at that roster, it's going to be a tough road to hoe against the Ukraine, I do believe, especially without Bradley, who makes the U.S. team tick, and that's what just makes me mad even more. And his final chance to play before the season ends, or for the European season ends, obviously, he's not going to be there.
Yeah, as you said earlier, our thoughts on this are well known. We did a spot on it before his whole move to Toronto, especially the 6-year deal of it. It's still kind of bizarre to me. Hopefully it doesn't make his play drop off as much as we think it might. Because, yeah, I'm like you. I'm not as down on the move as other people, but, yeah, I think he's made a mistake, but, whatever.
So this game is a good chance for some of these players to make their case to be on the roster for the World Cup. And as I've said before, I made it clear that I think that Klinsmann will reward players who are playing in Europe. So if some of these guys come in and are impressed, I think they will get a spot on the team over MLS players, because Klinsmann has made it clear he wants his players challenging themselves week in and week out. And the best player I could say who this will help, I will go on the record right now saying Jeff Cameron will be the right back for the U.S. this summer at the World Cup, because he has played very, very well there for Stoke, Arsenal's 1-0 loss to Stoke. Ha, 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 ha.
I was just about to say he played well against us again, because, like I said, when they played us at the Emirates, he was arguably one of the best players on the pitch in that first half. Mm-hmm. So he's definitely made that transition to right back with Stoke really well.
Mm-hmm. So hopefully he could get that spot, because honestly, it's clear to anyone he's a better option there than Brad Evans is. And no offense to Brad Evans, not Brad Evans, Did I get the wrong Brad? There's two Brads. Brad Evans.
Brad Davis.
Brad Davis. Oh, that is the right Brad. Sorry. See, I got confused there. Yes, Brad Evans is the Seattle Sounders midfielder who's been converted to right back. But you can't. No one can honestly tell me that Cameron, who's playing week in, week out in the EPL at right back, is not our best option at this point in time.
Yeah, playing week in, week out, and playing well.
Mm-hmm. So if Klinsmann is true to his word, I expect people like Cameron and others like him to earn roster spots and playing time this summer based on the fact that they are testing and challenging themselves and excelling at the highest level. So with that, we're running over our scheduled time already here, Corey. So that will wrap up the show for this week, and we thank you all for listening. Do you have anything you would like to tell the people as we exit stage right?
Chelsea for the title, as much as I hate to say it.
Okay. There's Corey's little tidbit.
Our season's over now. FA Cup. Concentrate on the FA Cup, Wenger.
So there we go. So, all right, folks, enjoy the midweek international footy this week. Corey and I will be on the blogs. I will be giving player ratings after the U.S. match, and Corey will probably be blogging about this Pardew situation. And we will be back with you next week to talk about everything that has transpired. So enjoy your week, and we will see you soon.
This has been the Two Daft Yanks podcast. If you like the show, be sure to find the Yanks at TwoDaftYanks.com or at TwoDaftYanks on Twitter. There, you can stay up to date on all the Two Daft Yanks action by subscribing to the show.